Welcome to Music from the Tower, highlighting the beauty of sacred and classical music. We come to you from the Tower of Hope on the magnificent campus of Christ Cathedral in Garden Grove, California. Now, here's your host, John Romeri.
This is John Romeri, your host, and you're listening to Music from the Tower, a program highlighting sacred and classical music. We come to you from the Tower of Hope on the beautiful campus of Christ Cathedral. Well, today, my friends, we have probably one of the most recognizable organists and certainly one of the greatest musicians of our time, Paul Jacobs. Welcome, Paul.
It's a pleasure to be with you, John.
Oh, my gosh, it's so wonderful to have you. I'm so pleased you're here in town and able to take time to be on our show. This man has so many accomplishments. I could really just use the entire hour to tell you about Paul. Paul Jacobs is the chair of the organ department of the prestigious Juilliard School, the youngest department chair, certainly one of the youngest in that school's history. He's an eloquent champion for our instrument, the pipe organ. He's one of the only organists, probably the only organist, to have won a Grammy. The Washington Post says Paul Jacobs is one of the living greatest virtuosos. The New York Magazine says he's a major musician of our time. How's that feel, Paul? That's pretty amazing. You are just an amazing person, and we are so pleased to have you here on Music from the Tower. I'd like to spend this first segment just talking about Paul Jacobs. We're going to talk about the organ, lots of other things, but let's talk about Paul Jacobs. What led you to the organ? I know you're from Western Pennsylvania, near Pittsburgh. I was there about the same time you were growing up. And tell us a little about who was your mentor. Who was your Paul Jacobs?
Oh, well, thank you, John. I was fortunate to have more than one mentor growing up, namely an excellent organ teacher, George Rao, piano teacher, Susan Woodard, and the priest of the home parish that I attended in Washington, Immaculate Conception, Father John Bauer. All of these individuals were supportive of my interest in music. I mean, it was more than an interest. It was an obsession. And I can recall as a boy climbing the stairs at the end of Mass and watching Sister Helen play the postlude. In retrospect, Sister Helen may not have been the most advanced organist, but I was just bewitched by the pipes and the mechanics and the colors of the great organ at the church.
Isn't that a wonderful story? And I think so many of us have that same story. We all had a Sister Helen somewhere. And they were probably horrible. It was probably musicians who we would now go, oh, my gosh, what's going on here? But yet there was something in that person that drew us to this wonderful instrument, to this great sacred music. So it's interesting to hear you say the very same story that so many of us share.
Oh, absolutely. I think that most organists certainly have their first encounters with the instrument in church. And I think it was Charles Marie Vidor, the great French organist, who said, to play the organ well, one must appreciate the eternal. And there is an awesomeness to the instrument. And certainly, when you deal with religious matters, there is also a great awesomeness and power.
Yeah, well, the organ is certainly one of the great instruments. And later on in the program, we're going to talk about the pipe organ and its future, where it's headed. So you were a high school church organist. So did you feel as though you were going to remain a church organist? Did you somehow have aspirations of being a teacher in one of the greatest schools in America, probably on the planet, or a concert organist who's just out playing concerts in every possible venue all over the world? What kind of was your vision of where Paul Jacobs was headed?
Now, I certainly had the vision of my work being primarily in the church. As a teenager, of course, I was the organist of this very large Catholic church in southwestern Pennsylvania and spent many hours playing many masses and loved it, absolutely loved working in that setting. But, of course, life unfolds in ways that we don't often expect. And I just eventually began to do other things, though I still have a great love of sacred music, liturgical playing, and everything related to it.
Well, I'm sure that comes through in your teaching as well. One of the teachers we share is our wonderful friend, John Weaver. You studied with him at the Curtis Institute in Philadelphia. Years before that, I studied with him at Westminster Choir College in Princeton. Take us a little bit through your journey of how you went on to college and how you chose your college and what that was like, how that made you this great performer.
Yes. Well, my high school organ teacher, George Rao, who remains a dear friend, he pushed me in the direction, I should say he guided me in the direction of the Curtis Institute of Music in Philadelphia, where John Weaver taught. And of course, for a young musician, finding the right teacher for college is really the most important consideration. And I had heard nothing but glowing things, not only about John Weaver as a musician, but John Weaver as a person. And these sorts of things made the decision easy when I was accepted to Curtis. I knew that that's where I wanted to be. And, of course, I would not be where I am now without John Weaver, a great man.
I totally agree. He was an amazing teacher and came to the choir college to teach a few of us each week. And what a great man, a wonderful musician, a consummate musician. And that click with the teacher is an important thing. I know that as some of my students have applied to the Juilliard School where you are, you know, just knowing that that person was going to be with you. And we're going to talk to some of your students later on in the show. But there is that wonderful bond. I studied with Charles Schilling at the University of Pacific for undergrad. And what a bond there is between teacher and student. You know, it's way beyond just somebody to coach you or somebody to guide you. But it really is somebody that becomes part of your life. The sense of teacher-student is amazing.
Well, yes, and it's something that you hope the teacher is going to take an interest in the student for the rest of the student's life and the teacher's life. It's not just for those years when the student is studying at the institution.
Well, and it's funny how your teachers do follow you, you know, and find out where you are and what you're up to and what recordings you've made and who you've played with. But it's just great to see the students that you have at Juilliard becoming some of the greatest organists in our country, you know, taking on these gigantic positions of St. John the Divine here at Christ's Cathedral, St. Patrick's Cathedral, St. Thomas in New York. Your students are permeating the organ world, and they bring with them that little bit of Paul Jacobs that's just amazing.
Well, it's been humbling to work with such extraordinary talent. That's all I can say. And I look forward to doing it for many years.
Well, I hope you do. We all hope you do. Tell us a little more insight into Paul Jacobs.
Well, you know, music is something that I care about. Certainly, music and its ability to open up not only intense emotions, but perhaps be a portal to the divine, the sacred music, dealing with the most profound music has always been of interest to me, whether you're talking about these large works of Bach or Reger or Messiaen, music that touches upon the most ultimate matters in life and is able to move the heart and just kind of envelop the human being. This is what I think an organist is meant to do. It's not just executing the notes that are on the page, but there is a soul, there is a spirit that needs to be a part of the mission.
You and I both know 1,000 organists that play every single note right. I was never one of those. You are, but I wasn't. But there was a certain something about our playing that your playing is so dynamic and so uses the instrument better than almost any organist on the planet. You know how to call those senses right out of the organ and into the audience's ear. I love it when you speak to the audience. You're such a champion for the organ. We're going to talk about that later. But also just a champion for being present at a concert. I remember one time you played a concert for me in St. Louis, and you spoke so eloquently about just being present, you know, putting your cell phone away, just actually listening to the moment, you know, being there present at the concert. That's something hard for us to do these days, isn't it?
Oh, very difficult. We're so tuned and dependent upon technology, but we really must do this. There is a timelessness, I believe, in experiencing music. It pulls us out of the mundane and puts us into a better world, a better plane of existence. And I think we crave that deep down, even if we're unaware of it.
I completely agree. Well, Paul Jacobs made musical history at the age of 23, playing Bach's complete organ works in an 18-hour marathon. Makes playing all sorts of Easter masses like nothing, Paul. You celebrated the 250th anniversary of Bach's death, and we're going to spend the rest of our time in this segment listening to Paul play a little Bach. Tell us what we're going to hear.
I guess recently I had the pleasure of playing the organ in Alice Tully Hall, and I shared for the audience a virtuosic prelude and fugue of Bach in D major that features a lot of virtuosic pedal work, and it's all visible so everyone could see and hear this great music. So we'll hear a little bit of this D major fugue from Alice Tully Hall in New York.
And we'll be right back with Paul Jacobs when we're going to talk about the pipe organ. You're listening to Music from the Tower. With Music from the Tower. Today we're speaking with certainly one of the most famous organists on our planet, Paul Jacobs. Welcome again, Paul. It is so good to have you. In this segment, we're going to talk about the pipe organ. You've certainly become one of those fierce champions for our beautiful instrument throughout your whole career. Let's talk a little bit about the pipe organ and its future, and whether pipe organs will only be relegated to concert halls, great churches, and all others will have maybe an electronic substitute, and about whether the organ is the ideal instrument for worship. Is it?
I certainly think it is. Perhaps I'm biased, but yes, we know that the organ has had a place in sacred worship for over 1,000 years, and I can't imagine an instrument that is able to conjure up the majesty, the glory, the beauty, all of these qualities, the mystery. You go into one of the great churches or cathedrals in France, and you experience one of these instruments, and it becomes clear that there can be no superior instrument than a great organ to sacred worship.
Well, it's certainly tied to these great buildings, isn't it? You know, the first thing I do, probably you too, is to turn around and find this great organ somewhere. And right here in Southern California, we have churches being built without space or without organs. Just this past week, the Baltimore paper and the LA Times ran articles about the organist shortage. So even if it is the perfect instrument for worship, and we'll talk a little bit more about that, are there going to be competent musicians to play these organs?
Well, that is the question. From what I see at Juilliard and my own students, yes, there certainly are fiercely gifted and determined young talents out there. The question is, can there be more? Certainly. We hope that there will be more organists. It's a little bit different from, say, piano or violin, where good ones grow on trees. But with organ, I fear that maybe the church in some ways and the culture at large has lost some of its historical sense, some of the sense of music in the role of the liturgy, but also in daily life, in cultural life, and recognizing what it has done in the past and what it can still do for us in the present. Many people know that. this. I think there are a lot of young people out there that know that there's more to, I think, what the popular culture can give. And I think even in churches, there's a lot more that people can experience than they've been giving. Their inheritance is really what is at stake here.
What's missing? What's missing? And some of it, I think, organists have done to themselves, and maybe not in your generation, but certainly in my generation. And maybe you remember this growing up in Pittsburgh. During my time in Pittsburgh, I was there 19 years. I remember this magnificent organ at the Catholic Cathedral, a von Beckrott instrument from Germany, this wonderful instrument, but no one could play it. No one could play it. And when I became diocesan director, we opened that up to our students at Duquesne, to all sorts of people. But there was a certain generation of organists that guarded their organs, you know, that no one could play their instrument. And I think probably it kept people from being interested in the organ or leading. It's those great instruments that can inspire a wonderful young student, not the little Hammond in a tiny little church. You know, I feel like we have that responsibility to bring these young pianists to the organ.
Yes, because how could you not be inspired when you encounter that Beckerat organ in the Catholic Cathedral in Pittsburgh? It's incredible. And you don't even have to be a musician not to be moved by the visual splendor of it, let alone to hear it.
To hear it, exactly, to be able to hear it. So if it is the perfect instrument for worship, what makes it better than a piano or a rock band or an ensemble?
Well, I'd say there's a sense of the literature, the music itself that has been written for it over centuries. There's a tradition there that is timeless. It's music, just on a practical level, congregational singing, the wonderful bass, the gravity of the organ, the many moods that it can convey from solemnity to joy. You know, all of these kinds of things, they do require a skilled musician, somebody who has studied the instrument, and that does take time. But my goodness, it pays off in dividends. I mean, once you get somebody who knows how to make an organ talk, make it sing, it's just spectacular.
It's funny, people's reaction to the organ. When I came here to Christ Cathedral, the organ was not played. And so people looked at it and said, oh, it's going to be so loud. It won't really fit with our, like a Vietnamese mass. And I go, of course it will. You know, and they began to experience the colors, the soft sounds. I always tried to very much underplay the sounds and stay under their, but people were enamored with the sounds right away, you know, not fearful. Do you think there's a lot of people who come to the organ, perhaps they're pianists, especially in smaller churches, where the reason people don't like the organ is because the people playing it aren't playing it very well. They don't know the instrument. They don't know how to utilize the colors. They don't have Paul Jacobs as their teacher to show them how to use colors at their foremost.
Yes, good training is crucial. To know how to use these complicated machines takes some effort. It takes years of study. But the rewards, I think you can speak with any young musician, as someone who has made an investment in the study of this tradition, of this great instrument of the church, and it also fits well in the secular musical scene as well, it will reward generously. And that's what I want people to experience today.
Well, and when they hear Paul Jacobs, they certainly experience that joy and that amazing sound. So music in the church is not the only place you hear the organ. Used to be every town hall had an organ.
Mm-hmm.
Used to be you heard them at theaters. You heard them everywhere. And there's been a wonderful resurgence of pipe organs in concert halls in America. And I am happy to say that I've heard Paul Jacobs play them in several. I just heard them at the L.A. Phil. I've heard them play with the Philadelphia Orchestra. I have heard Paul Jacobs play all over the place with these fabulous symphonic instruments. Tell us a little bit about those. L.A. has a wonderful one. Segerstrom Center here in Orange County has one. And I must say, the darling of both of those instruments is Paul Jacobs. Everybody loves Paul Jacobs to come and play with the Orange County Symphony with the Pacific Symphony, and with the LA Philharmonic. It is such a treat to hear you come and play with our local symphonies, but I know you've been playing all over the country.
Well, John, from my earliest years, I've wanted the organ scene to be a bit broader. Sometimes young organists are a little too insular, and they don't experience music in a broader context. I wanted to make music with other musicians, not just with singers, but violinists and trumpeters, and you know, all go down the list. And of course, with orchestras, there is a wonderful repertoire for organ and orchestra that is just waiting to be unearthed, to be discovered by audiences. So I've made it a bit of a mission to build a bridge from the organ world into the broader realm of classical music.
Well, you certainly have done that. I was fortunate enough to be the organist with the St. Louis Symphony during my years there. And sad to say, there was not a magnificent organ in that hall. But the thrill of playing with musicians at that level was amazing. You know, most of us organists, we play by ourselves. You know, there's a certain loneliness to,
sure.
But the being able to play with a magnificent ensemble like the LA Phil or the St. Louis Symphony or any of these great orchestras, certainly Philadelphia, it's thrilling, isn't it?
Yes, it really is. And it's something that I would love to see more organists have the burning desire to do, but not just one-off, but just to see this be more commonplace.
Yes, it would be wonderful to see named positions. I was always an adjunct person. You know, even the pianist for the symphony was always listed as a member of the orchestra. But there aren't members of the orchestra often who are organists. We're just brought in for this concert or that concert. Of course, they think of the Saint-Saëns, a big old organ chord. But there are so many wonderful pieces, the Young and all these great symphonies that are part of that repertoire that rarely get played because either the hall doesn't have a magnificent organ or nobody really knows that repertoire. The conductors don't think in terms of those repertoires. Philadelphia was very, very lucky with Yannick because he loved the use of the organ. We had whole organ festivals when I lived in Philadelphia in which you played, which was thrilling.
Yeah, it's true. And organists need to be a little more, I would say, assertive when it comes to introducing their instrument to other musicians, including conductors.
Yeah, exactly. Well, we're going to hear Paul play a little bit of a piece with organ and symphony orchestra. Paul, tell us about this piece.
This was a recording made with the San Francisco Symphony a few years back of Lou Harrison's organ concerto for organ, obviously, and a large band of percussionists. This is the final movement of this joyful, clangorous concerto for organ and percussion.
So here is Paul Jacobs with the San Francisco Symphony, and we'll be right back. Welcome back to Music from the Tower. Today's guest, certainly one of America's most known organ performers, Paul Jacobs. But in this segment, we're going to hear from a student of Paul Jacobs, David Ball. David Ball has just become the new organist here at Christ Cathedral, playing in one of America's largest churches. We talked a little bit in previous segment about what it feels like to have your students be in America's largest churches, St. John the Divine, Christ Cathedral, St. Thomas Church, St. Patrick's. And so here we're going to hear from one of Paul's prized students. David's been here at the cathedral now for over 6 months, and what a huge difference in the musical life of our cathedral he has already made. So welcome, David. It's good
Hi.
To have you.
Thanks for having me.
My pleasure. So let's talk a little bit about this Paul Jacobs teacher guy. Let's hear what it was like to study with one of the great master teachers of our time.
Well, studying at Juilliard was a really wonderful experience. The organ department especially, because it's such a warm and friendly environment with a small group of students. But also, Juilliard was interesting because it combined sort of the most inspiring things and also sort of the most stressful things. So, you know, our organ lessons would be these inspiring sort of intimate moments where Paul would impart his knowledge to me and give suggestions. And lots. We talk about interpretation and musical history and styles. But then, on the other hand, we had this organ class every Thursday that we had to prepare a new piece for every single week. That wasn't just for the organ department, it was open to the public. So right away, we were performing our pieces and sharing them with the world, and that was an inspiring and amazing thing, but also a very stressful one, but in the end, a fun one. But.
So, Paul, was David an inspiring student?
Oh, my goodness. David was an inspiring student, and I would say that he always had in our organ classes one of the most remarkable stage presences, because the students are expected to verbally introduce what it is they're going to play each week before our audience, to talk about it for a minute or two. And David was able to combine helpful information as well as a jovial, inviting personality, as you can hear in his voice when he speaks now. So, yes, David was a first-rate student in many ways.
What were some of the things that inspired you that Paul imparted to you?
Well, it was amazing to have a teacher who was so such a prominent performer, because you know, you can hear him on the radio, you can hear him in his CDs, his Grammy-winning CD, which is always wonderful and an inspiration. And it was amazing to you hear these things in public, and then to be able to go into a lesson. And I loved studying pieces that you played, because then I could prepare this piece, and then you could tell me, impart your secrets to me, and what really gets into this piece, and I'd be able to talk to someone who knew the piece so intimately, and to be able to share in that was just amazing.
We talked in a previous segment about both of us studying with John Weaver, and that was one of the things that he did was what pieces he was playing in concert were the pieces you studied at your lessons. And it was a very interesting insight. So you'd go hear him play in concerts, and it was thrilling to have also a concert organist who was your teacher. But he would be playing the same pieces you were working on. It was very scary and thrilling all at once, you know.
But it makes it very personal, too, because you hear from someone who has such an interaction with the piece, and you get to sort of partake in that and make it your own.
Well, I would hope that my students would know my position is not to create clones of myself. I want them to develop their own voice, their own musical signature, and they can take what they'd like from my own interpretations and ideas, but I want them to add to it as well.
But I think being molded and shaped like from a mentor like a Paul Jacobs must have been amazing.
Oh, yeah. Well, and it was interesting, too. In the organ classes, some of us, obviously, when you're in school, you study sort of standard repertoire. And so we'd all sort of play some standard Bach pieces and Messiaen and Wiern. But to hear every person have their own individual touch to these pieces, even though we're all playing the same organ and had the same teacher and we're in the same environment, but every person had their own individual voice. And I think that was something really special about the Juilliard organ department, was that we all have these personalities and they all came out in class every single week.
But don't you think that came from Paul's openness to being able to let you also use your own voice? I remember going to play in a competition as a young student, and three of us went from the same school, and we all played the piece exactly the same because our teacher taught us that piece exactly the same. We all changed manuals exactly at the same place. We all used the same registration, and we all tied for third place. So, it's wonderful that, I mean, I've heard David play many times. I've heard other people, Ray at St. John the Divine. They each play with their own wonderful character.
Yes, and the character, of course, is to move the listener. It's not to play in an academic kind of a party line way, but really to stir the heart of the listener.
Well, David received his bachelor's and master's from you, so he studied with you for 6 years at really the greatest school on the planet and with one of the greatest teachers. So how did that prepare you, David, to come here to Christ Cathedral to get ready to play the fifth largest organ in the world?
Well, as Paul said, you know, the music is about inspiring people and touching people's lives, and Juilliard really prepped me for that because we were constantly performing. We were constantly taking these pieces that we'd play, you know, we'd practice in a room by ourselves for hours, but then right away we were sharing them with audiences. He mentioned that we talk to audiences before we play every single week. And it's the same thing, you know, here at Christ Cathedral, we're bringing organ music to so many people we have on campus. We have so many people at every single Mass, 12 Masses a Sunday, and 8 of them have organ. And it's just incredible to be able to share that.
Including with people that maybe don't know much about music. I think that's very important. I expect the students to be open and interact with the experts as well as people that are uninitiated when it comes to their craft.
Well, certainly the people here at Christ Cathedral were super not knowledgeable about the organ. They saw it every Sunday, but they had no idea what it could do, you know? And I think they were just amazed that most of their reaction was, oh, it's going to be so loud. You know, they're seeing hundreds of pipes. There's 82 rank Aeolian Skinner in our wonderful arboretum. And they were so surprised that it had soft sounds and chimes and harp and, you know, low sounds, 32s. All of that added to so much to the worship that they had no idea. They had up till that point heard the piano and maybe a few ensemble instruments. But the organ brought them a whole new life.
Yes, under David's expert hands, it certainly would. The organ can be loud, but it can be all of the things that you've just described, John.
It's pretty amazing. We talked a little bit about having this master teacher at your hands, and I'm proud to say that David has already continued that tremendous passion you have put inside of him. Our children's choir, about 60 children from all over the diocese, already has 3 wonderful little organ scholars who David has taken under his wing. Tell us a little bit about these kids.
Oh, they're wonderful kids. They're all in 6th grade, and there's Isabella, Andre, and Ethan, and they are the most excited kids. They see the organ, and they see how big it is, and they see all the different buttons, and they're so excited. And they also love music. I think a lot of that's from being in diocesan choir here. They have exposure to great music, and so when they're around it and in it and involved in it, they want to be more involved, and they all started on piano. And so then they see me playing at the keyboards, and they're like, well, if I can play one keyboard, I can play all of these. And so it's really inspiring for me, actually, just to see how enthusiastic these 6th graders are about organ.
I had that very same experience with a young man in St. Louis when I was at the cathedral. This little kid came to me in 4th grade and was in my choir. He played piano and trumpet. And before you know it, we lured him to the organ. And he became one of the organists here at Christ Cathedral named David Ball. I'm proud to say that David was one of my students in 8th grade and played all the way through high school at the cathedral in St. Louis. And I think it is the responsibility, we talked a little bit about this in a previous segment, of organists in large buildings, in large cathedrals, to bring other organists to that space, to that place where, wow, this is an amazing machine. And how exciting it is to be able to take a young person and bring them to the organ and then send them off to Juilliard and study with Paul Jacobs.
Well, what more can I say to that other than I'm deeply honored and just to have students like David. You know, I can't even imagine my life without the David Balls and, of course, Michael Hay, who will be coming up, and other students, so many students. It gives me a sense that my life really is making an impact, not just as a performer, but as a teacher. There's a lot of work that needs to be done, and we really do, as organists, need to be of one mind in the work, the quality of work, and the final mission of the work.
Well, you're certainly filling America's churches with some of the best organists in the world. It's wonderful to see all of these young people coming right out and taking some of the biggest jobs in the country. And we're going to hear a little bit more from one of those students in our next segment. But before we do, Paul, you know, is a Grammy winner. And let's have a little bit of music from his Grammy album of Messiaen. Paul, tell us what we're going to hear.
Sure. We will hear the third movement of Messiaen's Book of the Holy Sacrament, Livre du Saint Sacrement, The Hidden God. It's just bursting with color and voluptuous harmonies and a little bird song.
And here is Paul Jacobs playing Messiaen, and we will be right back with another student of Paul's to finish out this hour. Welcome back to Music from the Tower. Today we're finishing this program with organist, musician, master teacher Paul Jacobs. And joining Paul on this final segment will be Michael Hay. Michael is the organist at St. Patrick's Cathedral in New York. So we still have David Ball here with us in the studio. Michael is joining us from New York, and it's two organists in two of the largest and most famous churches in America, and they both came from the studio of Paul Jacobs. Hello, Michael. Welcome.
Hi.
It's great to have you, and we've just been talking about Paul as teacher. It's certainly an amazing career, and we talked about having a great performer as teacher. You want to add a little bit to what it was like to study with Paul Jacobs?
Well, it was a fantastic experience from the beginning. I have to say, I definitely learned a lot from Paul. I didn't exactly have all the discipline I needed to, you know, pull through the musical career, and Paul really helped gladden me. And beyond just the discipline, I mean, Paul as a musician is one of the most inspiring people I've ever met and have been so fortunate to work with, and that's carried with me through the last several years and has continuing to carry with me through my new musical endeavors and at St. Patrick's and in other musical venues.
Well, I've been fortunate enough to invite you to Philadelphia when I was still working there, and you played with us on Organ Day, accompanying the playing a solo recital as well as accompanying the Philadelphia Opera. And you were amazing. You know, you could tell that all of the colorful registration that we hear Paul use was also part of your nature as well. I see that in David's playing, and I can imagine on that huge organ at St. Patrick's, it's really fun to utilize all those skills he taught you.
Sure is. And there are so many people who come through the cathedral. They estimate about 6 million people a year at foot in St. Patrick's. So, you know, an audience of both churchgoers and, of course, tourists and other visitors, it's really a blessing to be able to play music for all these different people.
And playing the organ is exceptional, especially a large organ like that in a large cathedral. Tell us a little bit about the organ itself, and we talked a little bit about the future of the organ. Is there a future to the organ?
Definitely. I mean, I don't think you could, you know, see St. Patrick's Cathedral without the organ, or, you know, go to a service there without hearing the music. At St. Patrick's, we have about 30 services a week minimum with music, which includes organ and at least a cantor, if not choir. You know, for all the people that are hearing organ, even for the first time, I think it can be a riveting experience.
And David, do you feel that same way at Christ Cathedral?
Oh, yeah. Well, here at Christ Cathedral and at St. Patrick's, there's this beautiful architecture and there's these beautiful grounds. And the organ is a part of that. You know, in St. Patrick's, it has such a prominent position in the back of the church, that beautiful case. And here at Christ Cathedral, we have the same thing. In the Arboretum, the organ is in this prominent position and it's part of the architecture and the beauty of these spaces.
Certainly, people coming to either of these two great churches in America are going to expect to hear the organ. Paul, did you train these two to play these giant instruments? Did you imagine that your students were going to take over every major church in America?
Well, I knew that both David and Michael and others, of course, would achieve great things. There's no question. And they deserve all the success that comes their way. I would say that I could not have imagined specifically that they would be where they are, but I had every confidence in them, that what they're going to give to the world in their lifetime through their art, I suppose, is a wonderful dream that will be realized.
I think that the whole point is, if you don't have it given to you, you can't give it away. I feel the same in my own career. I had marvelous teachers and other mentors in my life, and I'm sure David and Michael both feel the same, that having studied with you is something that they, what a great gift they were given, and now they're giving it away to thousands of people each weekend in their churches.
You know something, I just occurred to me, when David and Michael were students at Juilliard, they enjoyed a little break from time to time, visiting a chicken and rice stand, if I recall correctly. And I'm wondering if you still visit that, Michael. David doesn't get any anymore.
Tell us more about that.
I sure do. I mean, it's open all night long, and it's only a couple blocks from the cathedral. In fact, it's on the same block as St. Thomas Church. So if I'm walking home, I smell the chicken and rice there at 53rd and 6th, and usually I cannot resist.
So it wasn't all practice room. Let's hear a little more about that.
It wasn't all work. Let's just put it that way.
Well, music is food for the soul, but, I mean, food is also food for the soul. So, you know.
Well, I can remember Paul Jacobs calling me to say, David's just played his audition at Juilliard. What can we do to get David Ball to come to Juilliard? David, was that a good decision?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Well, and as we were just talking about, it's not just about the music and the experience with Paul. It's also the organ community there is so wonderful. The organ department, it's always so friendly, and it's about music and being with each other and going through the experience together.
Well, yes, and you know that these students are taking advantage of the full resources of New York City, which is perhaps the cultural capital of the United States, not to say that there aren't other wonderful things everywhere in the United States, but to be right next door to the Metropolitan Opera and the New York Phil and have all of these museums at their disposal, I encourage these students to take advantage, to immerse themselves in this culture, because it will be with them for the rest of their lives, and it will inform their playing.
And certainly great church music going on at these wonderful churches, to be able to really immerse themselves and to be the organ scholars in many of these parishes.
Yes, yes, that's correct. All of the students currently at Juilliard have very fine positions, either as music directors or as assistants at the most prominent churches.
Michael, what was your experience? Tell us a little bit more about your time at Juilliard.
I loved it. I can't say it was necessarily easy all the time, but in the end, it was all worth it. To have a community of not just organists, not just mentors like Paul, but, you know, like Paul was saying, other musicians, other artists, you know, whether actors or, you know, dancers, or some of my best friends there, just to be able to experience all these different art forms in New York City and at Juilliard. It's really, really influenced my organ playing, and I feel closer to, more in touch with what I'm doing and why I'm doing it as a result.
What about the competition between the students at Juilliard? How does that feel, watching somebody play?
Well, oftentimes it was more a competition of who can eat the most than it was, you know, who can play the best. and I honestly, what I love so much about the department, the organ department at Juilliard, was that we are a supportive bunch of people. And I don't think that, you know, making great art and music can be achieved, you know, completely in solitude, or, you know, trying to play these games of who's better at this, who's better at that. It's really a group effort, and I couldn't have done it without the organ department.
And did that come from Paul's leadership in that department? David, what do you think?
Oh, absolutely. Well, because he encouraged us to go out in the world and to, like, explore New York together. So, like, Michael and I would take trips, and, you know, we joke around about Chicken and Rice, but Chicken and Rice was right by St. Thomas, Fifth Avenue. And so, you know, you go to Evensong at St. Thomas, and then you do something social. And so we experience all these different concerts, as well as all the big cultures in New York.
Well, you know, along these lines, John and David and Michael, I've been so blessed to have students that just seem to instinctively know these are important things to do. The sense of community, character counts in what you're doing. I mean, this is a calling. Music is a vocation. And as Michael said, you're not enclosed in a bubble. In the past, some organists have kind of locked themselves in the organ gallery and not had much time to interact with not only fellow organists, but just average people. And it really is crucial not only for the survival of the art form, but for one's own personal happiness, for the student's own personal happiness as he or she becomes a professional, to be out and involved with the world.
Well, especially in church work. I mean, think of the hundreds of people in our music programs that you have to be able to encounter and deal with. And my experience of the Juilliard Organ Department was always one of immense friendship. You know, they all eat together. They all go out together. They all do all these things. Every visit I made to see David or to hear a performance, it was amazing at how well they got along. Now, I can remember as a young student auditioning at the Eastman School, and at the end of my audition, if you'd opened the door, there would have been 12 organists that fell in the wall in the room because they were all there to check out this new kid and, you know, in a very competitive way. And I think there are music schools like that, that if you're good, that makes me less good, you know, but I didn't feel that at all in the Juilliard School.
Well, and actually, at audition times, there were organists waiting out the door, but we had donuts. So.
It sounds like an eating school.
Yeah, don't give them the wrong idea, you guys.
Organ and culinary arts. Well, Michael, it's wonderful. I've enjoyed your playing so much. I hope you'll be out with us at Christ Cathedral very, very soon and to play a recital for us, as well as to play on Hazel when she returns to the cathedral. And, of course, I hope you'll be a guest soon again on Music from the Tower. We're going to end this segment with hearing Paul play one last piece, but I want to thank David and Michael and certainly Paul Jacobs for being on the show today. What a pleasure for us to talk to three of America's great organists. Thank you very much for being with us on Music from the Tower. And Paul, tell us a little bit about the final piece we'll hear.
We will hear some of Reger's great D major fugue. We began with a D major fugue of Bach, and we'll conclude the program with a great fugue by the 19th century German composer Max Reger.
You've been listening to Music from the Tower. I'm John Romeri, wishing you a great week ahead. And until the next time, please go and enjoy some live performance of some great music.